The information in this skill is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Welcome, and thank you for listening to the SMA Flash Briefings.
Hi, I'm Price Wooldridge. As a rare neuromuscular disorder patient myself, I enjoy reading flash briefings for spinal muscular atrophy. Here's an article by Forrest Ray, PhD. Assistive devices should be standard in managing SMA type 1. Assistive equipment is vital to enhancing function, fun, and social participation in children with severe disabilities such as spinal muscular atrophy, and should be considered standard care therapies along with medications such as Spinraza. A recent scientific study reviewed the available literature on assistive devices and equipment and presented those findings alongside the case report of a 5-year-old boy with SMA type 1 who uses a variety of devices to enhance his everyday life. The study, Enhancing Function, Fun and Participation with Assistive Devices, Adaptive Positioning, and Augmented Mobility for Young Children with Infantile Onset Spinal Muscular Atrophy, a Scoping Review, and Illustrative Case Report, was published in the journal Disabilities. Advances in medical interventions, both pharmaceutical and technological, have improved the prognosis for children with SMA type 1. These changes have led to higher emphasis on proactive interventions, such as adaptive equipment and assistive devices, meant to improve children's activity and social participation. Few scientific studies discussing these devices, however, have included an analysis of their role in treating SMA type 1. Researchers from the Sunny Hill Health Center in Vancouver, British Columbia, and the Montgomery County Infants and Toddlers Program, Silver Spring, Maryland, searched the Medline and CINAHL databases for studies containing evidence that supported the use of assistive devices in SMA type 1. CINAHL stands for Cumulative Index to Nursing and Allied Health. Of 223 articles, 17 were reviewed. 5 included children diagnosed with SMA type 1. These studies describe the use of augmentative communication, manual and power mobility, supported standing and orthotic devices. As an example of how these technologies affect the management of SMA type 1, the investigators presented their findings alongside the case of Tom, a 5-year-old boy who was diagnosed at 5 months. Tom had stopped kicking and lost head control at age 3 months, and by 7 months had been enrolled in a clinical trial of Spinraza. Tom began moving his arms 1 month following dosing and became able to remain seated cross-legged for 15 to 20 minutes by age 5. 3 studies discussed power mobility, which the researchers say has been, quote, consistently recommended as the only means of providing efficient, independent mobility for people with SMA type 1. Overall, these studies recommended early introduction of power mobility devices and the inclusion of supportive sitting and tilt-recline functions. Tom received a switch-adapted cart with tilt-recline function and an overhead arm suspension system at 11 months. He began independently exploring indoor and outdoor settings in a power wheelchair before reaching 20 months. He can now propel himself in a lightweight manual wheelchair. While no studies assessed the use of gait trainers, supportive walkers, or tricycles, several mentioned their use. One study, for instance, noted that 5 school-aged children tolerated arm cycling well. At almost 4 years of age, Tom received a hands-free dynamic mobility device similar to a gait trainer. At present, he stands upright while supported, and although he needs help in moving the walker forward, can take small steps. He also uses a fixed-gear special needs tricycle with supportive sitting, used to explore his street as an alternative to his wheelchair. One study addressed augmentative and alternative communication devices in SMA type 1 children. Most children either used hand gestures or speech, while a small number used a combination of both. Tom experienced severe speech problems and began using formal, symbol-based communication via tablet between the ages of 2 and 3. He currently uses a tablet largely for games and communicates mostly through speech. His tablet progressed from a specialized device with keyguard to a normal tablet as he gained strength and accuracy. Tom can now hold a pencil and is learning to print, although he likely will continue to use technological support. Mobile arm assists appeared broadly useful among people with diverse neuromuscular conditions. Tom, for instance, used a custom overhead sling arm assist to help him develop play skills and handle lightweight toys from 11 months until age 3. At this point, Tom had developed enough arm strength and movement to no longer need it. Participation in activities and other social interactions is a primary goal of pediatric rehabilitation. Despite limited data on how assistive technology supports and facilitates participation among children with SMA type 1, the available study suggests it plays a vital role. Using a variety of assistive tools, Tom interacts with his family and other children and enjoys a measure of independence outdoors and within his community. The technology enabling this soon may help him integrate into school. Finally, the researchers address the costs of medication and assistive technologies. For a child with SMA type 1, the estimated cost of the first 5 years of Spinraza is $2,295,000, approximately $127,500 per dose, 6 doses in the first year and 3 maintenance doses for each year thereafter. That of equipment covered in this study over the same time period is estimated at $125,500. The researchers wrote, quote, "Adaptive equipment that increases function, participation, and quality of life represents approximately 0.05% of the drug cost. If society accepts the cost of life-saving drugs and other medical interventions, we propose that providing the equipment needed to support activity and participation must also be considered standard of care."
Coming up next, perspectives from SMA News Today Forums Director Kevin Schaefer.
From Embracing My Inner Alien, a column by Kevin Schaefer. You know it's a unique relationship when one friend helps the other use the bathroom. This is the scenario I found myself in a couple weeks ago when my longtime friend Lucas held my urinal for me inside the bathroom of our go-to comic shop. While I normally use an external catheter, I was coming from an aquatherapy appointment, and as such, I still had my bathing suit on. Some might find it awkward or intimidating to ask a friend for assistance with things like going to the bathroom or getting dressed. For me, these instances are as commonplace as having friends over to watch movies or swap comic books. While my primary caregiver, Randy, and my parents take care of my essential needs, I inevitably need help throughout the day with physical tasks and care. Thus, I have several faithful companions who have entered my life at various times. Lucas remains one of my oldest friends. Having grown up with each other in church, we bonded not only over our shared interests, but also through rare disease spaces. While I was born with SMA, Lucas was born with congenital heart disease. He underwent a heart transplant in 2012, and while he only vocalizes his experiences with a select group of people, I am among this circle. We often exchange hospital stories, have raw conversations about medical trauma and mental health, and can be honest when we drive each other crazy. Though Lucas is one of the only friends I see in person right now, we're both eagerly anticipating the end of this pandemic so we can return to movie theaters and comic cons. Likewise, Jacob is someone I connected with right away. A fellow nerd and Ravenclaw I met in college, Jacob's love for sci-fi led to many of our early conversations. Our friendship grew when he became one of my paid assistants during my junior year. Through an independent living organization in North Carolina, I was allotted about 30 hours a week, which was in addition to my home care hours. I used these hours to hire a couple friends to drive me to and from campus, assist me with meals, and help with other tasks like feeding my service dog. When we first started working together, we were more casual friends who merely got along well. Then, during car rides, lunches, movies, and hangouts at my house, we formed a brotherhood. We went beyond service-level talk to discuss relationships, faith, purpose, pain, loss, the universe, and the beloved animated series Avatar: The Last Airbender. The latter subject led to our most philosophical conversations. Jacob and I remain close friends today. The other person I hired in college was Will, who's been one of my best friends since sixth grade. We met as dorky adolescents in drama class, thus marking the beginning of our theater journey. Throughout middle and high school, we performed together in shows, bonded during lengthy rehearsals, ate way too much fast food, and made other lifelong friends. In college, Will's experience began with tragedy when his mother's cancer took her, barely a few weeks into our freshman year. I still recall the last time I saw his mom, a wonderful woman who made everyone feel like family. The days that followed her passing were unlike any other experience in my lifetime. I remember the anguish, the silence, and the sheer uncertainty of what was to come. Will and I have laughed and cried together more times than I can count. Today, he lives on the other side of the country working for a healthcare company. I find it funny that even after all these years, even our career paths intertwined. We may not see each other in person these days, but we talk regularly. Lastly, one of my closest friends today came into my life at just the right time. Rich is years older than me, has more life experiences, and probably would have never met me were it not for a mutual friend from college. While we initially bonded over our shared love of pop culture, duh, we quickly began to have deeper conversations. Unlike a lot of people today, Rich isn't into small talk, social media discourse, or having a bunch of casual acquaintances. He'd much rather invest in a person, learn their story, and invite them for a 3-hour podcast. He's always been fascinated to learn about my disability and willing to help me, and he engages people on an intimate level. As Rare Disease Day approaches, I'm reminded that being rare means having rare friends. Friends who are imbued with a Samwise Gamgee kind of loyalty and empathy make a world of difference. For me, these companions are essential. I'm Kevin Schaefer, Forums Director and columnist for SMA News Today.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.